As this episode airs today, I'm hoping that a lot of you listening are doing so while dealing with fish. Why? Because that'd mean that you have fish to deal with, which would mean fish, salmon actually, are going into your freezers, and that'd be a good thing now, wouldn't it? So, in the hopes that you're working on salmon, or canning salmon, or pulling salmon from the nets, and listening to KDLG while you do, let's talk about fish today. My guess would be that most of what's getting targeted are sockeyes and kings. I know that's the case for friends of mine who are dealing with fish. I have a few other friends who are entrenched up the Nishigak, sport fishing for kings, as are many out-of-state anglers that might be staying with our area's lodges. I have yet to wet a line myself, as I've had other things to give my time to when I've had time. Frankly, if I was to get out and get after it right now, I'd probably try to find some place that might cough up a few northern pike. The sport anglers are probably also targeting species such as dollies, rainbow trout, and grayling. The common tie to those fish being sought after, whether by anglers of subsistence, commercial, or sport fishing means, is that they are all larger fish. Today, I'm going to take us in a different direction. Let's instead take a look at one of our area's smaller species, the stickleback. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. If you're not familiar with sticklebacks, well, that's somewhat understandable. They're just not very big, nor are they anything anyone is likely going to try to purposefully catch, though many of the species you do try to catch have a high regard for them. Stickleback species number in the teens worldwide. One site that I perused said that there are 16 species of sticklebacks found around the globe. Another site stated that there are 8 species found throughout the Northern Hemisphere. Closer to home, the venerable Togiak National Wildlife Refuge Wildlife List lists 2 species found on the refuge, the 3-spine stickleback and the 9-spine stickleback. Telling them apart is a pretty easy affair, even if you only go by the spines that make up a part of the dorsal fin. The 3-spine has 3 spines. The 9-spine then has 9 spines, correct? Well, not so fast. 9 spines actually have anywhere between 7 and 12 spines, though 9 is the most common number. What 9 spines don't have is just 3 spines. That'd make it a 3-spine stickleback. Sticklebacks are small, something along the lines of 2 to 4 inches. They're more long than flat, with the shape resembling a flattened-out elongated football. The face-nose area is pointy, and the caudal peduncle area is exceedingly narrow. In fact, just a glance at this part of the body is enough to know at a glance that you're looking at a stickleback of some sort. Body shape also varies to some degree with location. Fish found in the deep lakes typically feed close to the surface on plankton and often have large eyes with short, slim bodies and an upturned jaw. This is known as the limnetic form. Fish from shallow lakes feed mainly on the lake bed and are often long and heavily bodied with a relatively horizontal jaw and smaller eye. This is called the benthic form. Sticklebacks are silvery in color and are darker across the back, often a greenish or bluish shade, fading out down the sides. They have no scales, though some types have bony armor plates. Rigid spines are found in front of the dorsal fin, hence its name, with how many spines letting you know what type of stickleback you're dealing with. Breeding males turn a bright orange on their sides, and their eyes turn blue. With both species, there can be a freshwater and an anadromous form. Freshwater types living entirely in freshwater, while anadromous types live in saltwater or estuaries and move back to freshwaters to spawn. Sticklebacks can be found in streams, ponds, ditches, rock pools, and estuaries. The anadromous form, not unlike salmon, which are also anadromous, spend their adult life eating plankton and fish in the sea before returning to freshwater to breed. Freshwater sticklebacks are also found in freshwater lakes and streams. It's thought that freshwater populations likely formed when anadromous fish started spending their entire life cycle in freshwater and in the process evolved to live in such waters throughout the year. Freshwater species are extremely morphologically diverse to the extent that many scientists would describe a new subspecies in virtually every lake they came to. Clearly, such types of scientists are splitters, not lumpers. One article I read suggests the reason for that may point to poor parenting skills. A team of scientists discovered that sticklebacks sometimes eat their young. In fresh Arctic environments, different species learn to exploit very different food sources. The big word biological term attached to this is resource polymorphism. It's something that's also seen in whitefish and char, to name a couple of other Arctic species. The researchers contend that cannibalism helps them to stabilize the population. It eliminates some of the competition while ensuring a food source will always be available. It also allows individual fish to benefit from targeting other very specific food sources. An interesting side note to this is that populations of different subspecies can be found within the same water bodies, and these subspecies do not interbreed. Sticklebacks do not have a long lifespan, with 3 years being about the maximum. They are predatory in nature and eat all sorts of invertebrates such as worms, insect larvae, small snails, crustaceans, and water fleas. They also eat fish eggs and young fish, including, as noted, their own. They have tiny, sharp teeth, and when chasing a prey species, catch it by opening and pushing forward their jaws very quickly and sucking the food into their mouths. The stickleback itself is preyed upon by larger predators, such as larger fish, birds, such as kingfishers, and mammals, such as otters. I've opened up both char and pike on a number of occasions to view what they've been eating. In several cases, what I found is that the stomach and throat is so crammed full of sticklebacks that it left me to wonder why the predatory fish was bothering with my lure at all and how it had anything of an appetite given what was in its stomach. As I said at the beginning, you may not have much of an interest in sticklebacks, but most assuredly, the fish that you do like to catch do. Breeding is an interesting ordeal. Sticklebacks normally breed between late March and early August. During these months, there's plenty of food for the young. In the spring, male sticklebacks undergo the color change that results in bright orange throat and belly areas and blue eyes. The intensity of the orange is thought to be an indication of health, and so the more vibrant the color, the more likely the male is to attract females. A sort of small-scale fish bling, I guess. They're very territorial during this time, and these colors are thought to act as a warning to other males and also to attract the females. The male stickleback builds a nest that's often visited by multiple females. The nest is tubular in shape and made of plant debris. The male then fertilizes whatever eggs are deposited and guards the eggs until they hatch. The eggs require a lot of oxygen to develop, so the male uses its fins to wave oxygen-filled water over the eggs. The young feed on water fleas and tiny worms until developing into adults, which takes about a year for most subspecies. As I stated at the beginning, sticklebacks aren't a food fish targeted by people. That's not to say that they don't have importance to people in other ways. In some parts of our world, sticklebacks are turned into oil, agricultural fertilizer, and animal feed. In some places, such as southeastern Europe, sticklebacks are not well liked at all, and are considered a major league pest because they feed so heavily on the young of fish species that are caught for human consumption. Around Alaska, though, they are most often simply fodder for the types of fish that we do like to catch. Perhaps you're familiar with sticklebacks, or perhaps not. Given their size, it's easy to see how they could fly under the radar for most outdoors men and women from around our area. They came up on my own radar a couple of weeks ago during our annual campout for the American Heritage Girls Troop I help with. We set some minnow traps to see what we'd find, leaving them in place overnight with hot dog chunks for bait. The next day our traps produced salmon fry, silvers mostly, sculpins, isopods, and, you guessed it, sticklebacks, three spines specifically. We were able to take a good look at them before setting them free. Even though they're not a food fish for Bristol Bay residents, I am reminded of that old saying, you are what you eat. For those of us that enjoy eating larger fish species, like pike and char, sticklebacks, from their own end of the food chain, are very likely a part of what we are. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake, provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.